Now, back to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a returning guest on the line, Dr. Ben Colmery, who is a board-certified veterinary oral surgeon and dentist. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Colmery.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always our pleasure to have you on the show. Dr. Colmery, for any of our listeners who haven't heard your previous segments with us, can you describe your background so people understand kind of the path or the journey that you've been on?
Sure. Briefly, I graduated from veterinary school in 1968, and that makes me one of the older guys around. When I entered private practice, I realized pretty quickly that my training in the oral cavity at that time was pretty abysmal. I saw an awful lot of patients coming through the door that I just really didn't have a clue on how to manage. Fortunately, I can read, and fortunately, I was practicing in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and U of M has a dental school, so I sequestered myself in their library and read everything I could find on the oral cavity. Most of the research is done on dogs and then extrapolated to people, so I could have cared less about the people part of it than I looked at the dog part of it. And that was really my foundation. And since the early 70s, it's been a labor of love, and it's been my passion. And as time has gone on, the instrumentation, the materials, the techniques, all the toys that we have just so vastly improved that now at my age, when I have my compatriots that are talking about retiring, my response is, why? It's just starting to get fun. We can figure out what's wrong with these guys and do something about it.
There you go. That's a passionate person speaking right there. It always extends past any kind of some implied retirement age, for sure.
Well, Dr. Colmery, in terms of dental care, are we reaching a point where animals almost need to be on a similar schedule like human beings, where there's regular cleanings and cavity fillings and root canals? And I mean, describe a little bit for human beings who understand what they go through in dental. How is the animal world different than that?
Well, it's not different, and it tickles me the way you framed the question, because it's always been this way. It's just what has happened is that companions have gone from the outdoors in dog runs into the bedroom under the covers. There's been a tremendous change in the role of companion animals. When I first got out of school, at my hospital forum, I had a box, check one, indoor dog, outdoor dog. And the overwhelming majority of these animals were outdoor dogs and dog runs. And pet owners and the owners of the dogs would not necessarily notice anything was wrong with Rover until they noticed, Rover doesn't seem to be eating very much and is losing a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. Now, in this day and age, I don't have a box to check. They're all indoors. They're in the bedroom. They're either on top of the bed or under the covers with the pet owners. So now there's a much greater awareness, and especially one of the cardinal signs, of course, is halitosis. And when the dog hops up on the bed, or the kitty hops up on the bed and breathes in the animal or in the owner's face, and the gag reflex sets in, maybe there's a little something wrong here. So I think the awareness on the owner's part is much greater now, just because of the proximity to the pet.
Is there any one or two things that the general populace believes or assumes that tend to be based on faulty thoughts that you like to bring forth and talk about when they're thinking about responsible care inside their home?
Sure. And I think that one of the biggest misconceptions is oral pain and pain in general. And the problem is that masking pain is a survival instinct for these pets. Back when there were, I tell clients, back when there were dinosaurs on planet Earth, the wimps got consumed. And so it was in the animal's best interest to present themselves to the world as being fine. And it's just now that the family is the pack and not necessarily they're pack animals. And they need to present themselves to the pack as well as being fine. And it's just that the dynamics have changed, but the instincts are still there. So I think the fact that animals mask pain so well doesn't mean they don't feel it. They just don't let you know. And certainly in the oral cavity, anybody who's had an abscess tooth will tell you that's not a picnic. That's absolutely no fun whatsoever. And what never ceases to amaze me is the severity of disease that I see in animals' mouths. And these critters will come in wagging their tails and bouncing around. And I think, man, if that was my mouth, I'd bite the guy and be so crabby. So I think that's one of the singular misconceptions is the fact that it's about pain management. It's about the quality of life of these little critters, and there certainly are attainable goals in helping these guys out. So that's in the Mythbusters program, that's the first myth that has to get just blown out of the water. They hurt.
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
And is it cats that require the same kind of dental care as well as dog? I mean, we've talked with experts about horses and the importance of dental care for them because they keep growing and it causes major problems. But what about when it comes to cat teeth? Are they similar in needing the kind of care that you're doing for dogs, as an example?
Oh, absolutely. Every species has their own little twist on it. Teeth or teeth or teeth. It doesn't matter if it's a dog or a cat. Or yesterday I was at the Detroit Zoo working on an aardvark. And yeah, absolutely. And it had two abscessed teeth. And you know, how do you know an aardvark has an abscessed tooth? Well, you don't until you go looking. And it had a swelling on the side of its face. And you're not supposed to have bumps on the side of your face. And lo and behold, the first abscess was easily found. The second one was a little more subtle, and with a digital radiography, we were able to find it and deal with the second tooth as well. So every species has its hassles. It's just the presentation may be a little bit peculiar to the species. Cats have resorptive lesions. Dogs bust teeth. Aardvarks have periodontal disease and abscess teeth and malposition teeth, and I've worked on lions and tigers and bears and everything under the sun, and I don't do hoof stock. I let somebody else work on those guys, but I do the carnivores, and it's amazing the pathology that you find in all these different species.
Well, it's a fascinating thing. Now, you've talked a lot about dealing with the after effects when these problems are in. What are the preventative steps that owners need to be doing that they're not doing right now, which is causing their animals to unfortunately find themselves in the predicaments you've just described?
Sure. And I think there are several factors, and people have to understand that some things can be very difficult. I tell the clients with their pets to choose their parents wisely, because so many of the things that we see do tend to have a genetic predisposition. It doesn't mean they're all going to be have the same hassles, but that is a part of it. I think the singular things that people can do is condition the kitties and the puppies to understand that they're going to be fooling around in the mouth. You know, when they're young and innocent, take that washcloth, wrap it around your finger, and wipe it over the teeth. Don't wait until they're 3 years old and the teeth hurt like crazy and then you want to mess around in the mouth. You know, no animal in their right mind is going to let you do that. But if you condition them to begin with and use treats as rewards and that sort of stuff and let them understand, yeah, you're going to be looking in the mouth, and yeah, you're going to be fooling around in there, and yes, you get a treat afterwards. If you start when they're young, they just figure that's a normal day. You wait till they have pathology in the mouth, and that's when it gets to be a challenge.
And are there things that they should be exposing their dog or cat to in the way of whether it's teething or chewing or bones or toys or not toys, or, you know, what are the things that you see as an after effect of what a responsible or informed or ignorant or not responsible person does with their animal with respect to interacting with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the problem is there's always exceptions to every single rule. When people come in the office, I tell them, well, You could take the one dog you could care less about and feed him razor blades, and nothing would ever happen. It's always the pet that you don't want to have the problems that seem to. But the contributing factors to certainly a lot of problems, and again, it's generalization, so you have to be a little careful of that. But feeding raw, mushy, gooey, sticky, yucky food tends to be plaque inducive, both in dogs and cats. So I tend to be a little more of a fan of foods that have a little more substance to it and more of an abrasive action. So you can make the generalization dry versus canned. It's a concept, but I prefer foods that are a little crunchier when they bite down rather than the soft, gooey, sticky stuff, because that's just job security for me because they make so much junk on their teeth. I think the myth about giving dogs bones is something that most of clients that have come to me over the last 40-plus years have now discontinued, because hard chew objects like bones and like some of the chew toys that are advertised as dog-proof, they're not teeth-proof. And that's job security for my endodontic business, because the dogs are forever busting their teeth on them. Pulp exposures hurt like a booger, and when they are initially found, I can do root canals and fix the teeth, and if they're ignored, would they, that doesn't seem to bother them, don't worry about it, and then the face blows up and they look like a hippopotamus some morning because of all the abscess that's formed. That's never fun for the pet. So I tend to avoid really hard objects as chew toys. I tend to prefer things that have more of a give to it and are not necessarily dog-proof, because the dog-proof things are not teeth-proof.
Interesting. In terms of the overall brushing of teeth, I've seen a dramatic increase in terms of products available in stores like Rick's Pet Store and other pet stores. What's causing the increase of that? Is it just increased awareness, or have they come up with a really good flavored toothpaste for dogs that's just motivating the dogs to enjoy it a lot more? What's going on in that arena?
Well, I think some of it, and probably most of it, is stinky breath on the bed at night, and people realizing, oh my golly, we can't do something about this. I think also the fact that industry has discovered that dogs have teeth, and kitties have teeth, and maybe there's something that we can do about it. The oral cavity had been ignored for so many years, and the consequences of periodontal disease and endodontic disease and all these things has been on the back burners, and now all of a sudden, holy smokes, I got teeth. Maybe we should do something about it. Yes, there are similarities between human mouths and animals' mouths, of course. Again, teeth are teeth. And I think it's they anthropomorphize them in because we brush our teeth every day, then people think, well, maybe we ought to do that with our pets. And if people will do it, it's an awesome thing. It really, really helps. And the more people can do at home, the less I got to do in my office, and the better it is for the animal. So, yeah, I think it's a cool thing. It's just the mistake most people make, of course, as I said earlier, is they wait until there's disease and it hurts, and then they try to mess with them, and the animals dive underneath the couch and don't come out for 3 days because it hurts. And start when they're puppies and kittens, not when they have a disease problem. And lots of products, and they all have their kind of unique characteristics. And I think it's as much elbow grease as whatever product you use is doing it. Sitting on the shelf doesn't do any good. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's got to be used in the mouth.
Right. Dr. Colmery, I'm afraid we've run into our usual problem of being out of time. But before I let you go, if any of our listeners are interested in all of the various information that you've got available, how do they get in touch with you? What's your web address?
Well, the website is vetdentistry.com. It's one word, vetdentistry.com.
Okay.
I've had the site for a bazillion years, and it's I try to make it more on the medical aspects of what we see rather than, the glitzy pictures.
Right.
So if people want to get grossed out, go to that site, because I show the consequences of disease and what can be done, and more importantly, the ways that we deal with it, the anesthetic considerations, and that whole medical aspect.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We've been speaking this morning with Dr. Ben Colmery, who is a board-certified veterinary oral surgeon and dentist. Thank you again, Dr. Colmery. As always, great information.
Good.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Rick, after the break, we're going to continue the conversation right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.